Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, traders and investors. Welcome to this Wednesday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep, brought to you by Thinkorswim and TD Ameritrade. I'm Spencer Israel. No Joel today. As we mentioned yesterday, he's off celebrating the Jewish holiday of Yom Kippur. So just Dennis and I are with you today. I'm already cranky. It's 8 a.m. I'm hungry because I'm fasting. I've already broken the fast with a cup of coffee, however, so I'm already off to a really bad start on today, the day I'm supposed to atone for all my sins. So I'm off to a bad start to the day. Let's see how the S&P futures are doing this morning. Slightly better from yesterday's sell-off there. We're back up a little bit, down to up to the 21.32 level. Looking at the crude chart, let me pull that up for you 1 second. Crude is staying in that range there from yesterday. We're pretty even at around $51, and gold futures, we are again in yesterday's range of about 12.55 there. Dennis, how you doing on this fine Wednesday morning for everyone else? But I'm cranky.
I'm cranky too. I woke up with a sore throat, so I guess it's the fall season, and I'm going to end up getting sick right away. So, and the shocking thing is, it's actually not my kid. My kid's not sick. Usually, my kid gets sick, and then I get sick. So, for some reason, I've picked it up, and I'm just sick on my own. So, a little bit nasally, a little bit of a sore throat, a little bit of a runny nose. That fall season is upon us. Sick season for Denny. Yep. I was sick like six times last winter, Spencer. I hope it's not going to be the case this year. So I'm cranky too. It's a cranky Wednesday.
It is a cranky Wednesday. I remember you getting sick a lot last year. Actually, a lot this year.
And you know what? I got sick all those times. I don't think I ever missed a show, though.
No?
I don't take sick days. I just work through it.
Good job.
That's what you got to do as a trader. You can't take sick days. The market doesn't close for sick days.
All right. Where should we start off today?
We can start anywhere here. It's actually kind of a quiet news day here, but there is one big stock that's moving down overseas. It's Ericsson, E-R-I-C. Let's jump into that one. It's down 16% here in the pre-market. Spencer, give us the details.
Ericsson there. Oh, actually. I just lost it. Sorry about that. So I had it, and now it's gone in my pro.
Right. You're fasting. We understand. You don't have any food in your stomach, so
I've got no food in my stomach. No food since last night, and nothing but a cup of coffee. Yeah, E-R-I-C. I'm actually, Can you grab that? Because I actually don't have it.
All right, we're gonna. Okay, Spencer, I got your back. Let me go see what I can put down on Ericsson here. So it says your big mover here of the day. It's down 16%. If I'm looking at my down filters, it is down big time. I'm bringing up the report here. Ericsson from yesterday sees Q3 results significantly lower than forecast. That's all you need to know. That is the big headline there. And Ericsson obviously trading down significantly in the pre-market. It closed at 701. It's taken out its lows of the move. Low of the move was way down at 670. It is taken out by a full point. It's down at 582. If you don't trade Ericsson, you don't like trading ADRs like me, you got to know about this stuff, though, because it does affect other stocks in the sector. If you look at Cisco here this morning, Cisco trading down almost 1%. Juniper trading down 3% here in the pre-market. That seems a little bit overdone, actually, but 23.19 is last on Juniper. So you can see here this is going to knock down some of your network stocks here this morning.
Oh, I forgot to also mention at the top who we have as guests on today. Tom Mielke will be on at 8:20, and then Tim Seymour from CNBC, the founder of Emerging Money, he'll be on at 8:40. So look forward to his guest today.
Tim, I like Tim.
Yeah, we got Timmy and Tommy on today. So
Timmy and Tommy, what a show.
Yeah, what a show.
So we got 16 minutes here to jump in other stocks that are moving. So I'm just telling you, Ericsson, so be careful. Some of your network stocks here. Nokia, I also noticed, is trading down pretty big here this morning. Nokia is down 4% in the pre-market. So telecom networks, Ericsson related, be careful if you were trading those stocks. They look like they are going to be weak in sympathy here this morning. Let's talk about Twitter. We got to talk about Twitter every single day at the top of the show, the bottom of the show. I couldn't help myself.
Oh,
I sold.
What'd you do?
Twitter.
What?
I'm out. Yeah, I didn't want to be in it. And I was like looking at it. I stared at it all day. And I was like, you know what? I want out. And the whole reason behind it is if I think, you know, and I think it might be the case that they might not get a bid. I think when they officially say that it looks like all the bids are off the table, I think Twitter's going to have another down leg. So a lot of it priced in. But I think you might see Twitter down in the 14. Well, I think you can see it in the 16 handle here. So that's why I've sold it. I might be wrong. If a bid comes in, obviously, you know, that's good news. There is rumors here this morning that Salesforce.com is still sniffing around. So Twitter is trading up 1% here in the pre-market. So there is rumors, but so, again, they're just rumors.
Here's what's going to happen. Here's what's going to happen. Favors going to go on TV at like 9:05 or 9:10, and he's going to say that they're still in talks with Salesforce, like just like I did yesterday and the day before that, and it'll
rally. Saga might never end,
and it'll rally off that headline. But nothing new is happening, so can we just? Please, I'm so tired of this story.
You're tired of talking about Twitter. Joel still has his call, so Joel's long-term betting on the company itself. I want to bet on the company itself, but I want to get back into 14 where I originally got in. So I don't know if I'm going to get a shot at that. I do think, though, that if they officially say that everybody is out, then the stock is going to take another leg down, and that might be where I get more interested. So it's somewhat appealing to me at 18, still a little bit expensive for my taste, though. The market cap's still pretty high, and if they don't get in a bid here, I think it could go lower. And that's why I'm out. I'm out for now. If it goes and gaps up on, you know, a bid, good stuff. You know, if you're long it, great. I'm not going to, you know, say that I'd be a seller here at 18, although I was yesterday. I just sold my long. So I don't think I'd be selling it short, though, because there's lots of potential M&A action here still on table for Twitter. So
weren't people saying last week, or someone said this is the make or break quarter for Twitter. Maybe it was an analyst or someone on TV. I
think Joel was saying yesterday too. But when does Twitter report? When is the official report? Because Joel's saying yesterday that they always beat, but they miss on metrics. They miss on everything. They usually hit it after the report. I mean, if they're going to go out as their own company, they need to start beating on these quarters. I do like the fact that I've talked about this before, that they're starting to get into, you know, broadcasting live sports games. They're starting to realize what they are. They're a news service. They are a real-time news service that doesn't have to get verified stuff. They break things, you know, way before everybody else because official news services have to verify the information. Mm-hmm. Anybody can tweet anything, though. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a little bit, you know, of a news service, I would say, more than anything else.
They report the 27th, as Turbine says. That is 2 weeks from tomorrow.
All right. So you have 2 weeks before the report and 2 weeks of potential rumors.
2 weeks of nonsense. Yeah, 2 weeks of nonsense that we're stuck with. In the meantime.
All right, Apple. Let's talk Apple here. Apple is trading up a little bit here in the pre-market. Had a big day yesterday on the Samsung, stopping their production after all the fires there. And Apple actually gave back, though. So this is an example of, you know, a strong stock in a weak market, because the market, very weak yesterday, everything started to roll over. Apple was your leader, but it just could not hold on to the gains just simply because the market was too weak. I mean, when you get the Dow falling 200 points and you get the S&Ps down 20 or more handles there significantly, that's going to knock down all stocks usually. And that's what happened with Apple. I like Apple on pullbacks. I'm still long Apple. I think Apple's going to have a good quarter here, especially if everybody stops buying Samsung phones and starts buying Apple phones. So that's a consideration here. I like Apple short term, and I own it long term.
Some analyst commentary this morning on Apple. Nothing that really excites me. Nothing that I couldn't have said myself as, you know, a non-professional equity analyst. The Credit Suisse and Goldman Sachs both say they see a strong iPhone 7 cycle for Q4. That's obvious with the Samsung disaster. So,
yeah, I mean, if they don't have a strong quarter in Q4, that's not good news.
Right.
Nobody's running out and buying a Samsung here right now. Yeah. So it's got to be good news for the quarter for Apple, I would think. So that's why I like Apple short term and I like it long term.
Sure.
Other stocks in the news, let's move away from the big guns here and go into the little ones. One of the big losers of the day, we talked about Eric, but Fortinet, FTNT, is down big time here this morning as well. This has been on a three-day slide already. It was up at 37 just a week ago. Now we're at 34. Now in the pre-market, we're boom, 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 way down to 29.35. I always like to look at levels. Back on June 27, we got down to 29.88. So there was some support here. Again, it's trading 46,000 shares. We're going to trade a lot of volume last night as well. Let's see where it opens and see if that 30 level holds. If it doesn't, obviously, then, you know, it gets interesting. But what is the news that's knocking
Fortinet cut their Q3 outlook. They cut their sales outlook from $319 to $324 million. What it was, now it's $311 to $316 million. So they cut it by about $8 million there. Estimate was $322, so coming up short on that. They also cut their adjusted EPS outlook as well by 2 cents. So
this earnings season's not going well so far. And we only really had one stock officially report, but we get a couple other stocks warning here. So Alcoa really, really got hit yesterday there. I tried to play it, actually.
Really?
And I bought it off the open. I was like, no, I'm wrong. And you know how? And this is the one thing, you know, and I can do a little education for the next 2-3 minutes here. I've been trading 17 years, a lot of times you realize you're wrong almost immediately. And when you can realize that you're wrong immediately, I get out of the trade as quickly as I can. So, you know, Alcoa was trading, you know, and I was thinking, oh, maybe it was trading upwards of $30 in the pre-market. It was going to open way down. It opened down at like 29, 27. That was the official open. And then it started to, it looked like it wanted to pop, and then it just started to cave. And I'm like, no, once it starts taking out the opening price, I wanted, that trade was an opening OPG order, so I'm buying on the open. And I wanted it to open at the lows. And once it took out the opening price, I'm like, no, I'm out. So I think I lost like a dime, and it was a good loss because that stock started to cave, and within 20 minutes it was down another point. So that's one of those trades where you lose money, but it's actually a good trade because you realized quickly that you're on the wrong side of the trade. How do you realize you're on the wrong side of the trade? It's easy. You start losing money. So, and it starts moving against you. I mean, there's a little bit of wiggle room in a decimal-laden world. You're never going to get the bottom perfectly. But on the open, sometimes you can get it perfectly because stocks often do open at the low of the day, something Joel taught me way back. And I don't have the statistics in front of me, but I would say, you know, there's just from our averages looking back in 1999, we'd always say about 20% of the time a stock will open at its low of the day or open at its high of the day. And if you can collect that, you know, and get that spot, that 1 out of 5 times, then you know those trades can really work out in your favor because you're never going to take any heat and the stock can continue to move higher from there. So that's something to consider is that the opening print is so important. And when you have a stock that was trading in a 30 handle in the pre-market, opens down 29.37, a lot of times it'll pull back up. But that wasn't the case. Sellers started to flock in. A lot of institutional orders start to come in and stocks just take out its opening price. That's a sign that the stock wants to go lower. And that's why I was out.
What about some sympathy plays on the FTNT thing? We had FireEye down 4% yesterday after hours. Palo Alto was down 1.5%. Checkpoint Net was down 1%.
Yeah, all those stocks. And Palo Alto Networks is down 5 points here. I don't know if that's – did they have news as well? Because that's a hell of a sympathy move here. Was there something specifically on PANW, Spencer?
Not that I saw.
Because it had a bad day yesterday, and we're looking at 149.60 is the offer here on Palo Alto Networks this morning. So that's losing another 5 points here in the pre-market. I'm just checking, too, just to see, you know, what's happening in the world of Palo Alto Networks, because that is a strong sympathy move. That's just on the Fortinet, but maybe it is. You know, that's an impressive move down. So it's going to open down over 5%. 150, I would say, you know, is a critical area, probably a big psychological level. It's offered below there, so it looks like it wants to go below there. The stock looks broken. I mean, 3 days ago it was looking okay, but that big red ugly candle from yesterday is putting that's ugly on a lot of different charts, but really ugly on this one. And now you get a follow-through of another 5-point down move. That's not a pretty-looking chart.
Question from Don33 in the chat. Dennis, when a trade goes against you, what is your percentage down tolerance that before you get out?
Depends on your time frame. I will say swing trading, I typically want a 3-to-1 risk reward ratio. So if I'm going for 3 points, I'll risk $1. I will say with long-term investing, it's a lot different. I'm buying companies and sometimes I take them to zero. Sometimes I take them and they go up like a MasterCard I've had in my portfolio for 7 years. I'm averaging at like $15. It's 100. I will say the one thing in long-term investing is if you're going to hold stocks to zero, and sometimes I do, you need to be able to hold the stocks to well over 100%. You need to, you know, be having winners that are that large because, you know, sometimes when you're holding something to zero, that's really going to eat away your portfolio. So again, diversification. So 3 different time frames, you know, 3 different answers to your question. Long-term investing, I've kind of like when I don't like the story anymore. That's when I get out, you know, on those. In my swing trading account, I want the 3-to-1 risk reward setup. In my day trading account, you're going to find this shocking. As soon as I get red in the stock, I don't want to be red in the stock. And that's even by like a dime, a nickel. If I'm getting red in it, I'm on the wrong side of the trade. I'm usually entering the trade, you know, with momentum, or I'm usually entering the trade at a critical level that I don't want it to breach. There's a reason, and my risk tolerance is very, very, very tight on day trades. And I've been a professional day trader for 17 years. So, you know, you can say, well, you're never going to get it perfectly. Well, I'll tell you, you can. you can get them very close. So I would say tops on most trades, a nickel on my day trade. So I do not risk a lot. I don't like being red. A lot of times, you know, in the open, sometimes I get filled in 10, 12 stocks. I immediately go to the red ones and start cutting them out. And some of my winners, like I said, a lot of those stocks open at the lows of the day. And those ones will really work out in your favor. So, you know, if you never take heat on it, it's hard to get shaken out of it. So the big thing is when the day trades, you need to have very tight stops. I know Ace, he trades some of the Wild Child too, and he's very good with the risk tolerance as well. Maybe Ace can answer that question in the chat as well, but I think his risk tolerance is very low too. He doesn't like getting down in the stocks either. He likes playing with the house's money, and that's the key thing with day trading, because a lot of people always have, you know, this, you know, thought process that, okay, well, you know, I'm down in it, but it's going to come back. And once you start hoping in a trade, you're in the hopeless trade and you're in a lot of trouble. So that's the three. So day trading, very, very high risk tolerance, and very, you know, I'm very tight with, you know, how much money I'm going to risk. And I don't want to really even be red in the trade as much as I can. I mean, a couple cents is a couple cents, but I don't want to start getting down a nickel or a dime or a quarter or, you know, 0.2, 0.3, 0.4% in it. Again, swing trading, 1-to-3, 3-to-1 risk reward ratio. So if I'm risking a buck, I want to make three. And then long-term investing, well, I don't like the story anymore.
I can't speak to trading, but general rule of thumb for investing is 1%. You shouldn't stand to lose more than 1% of your liquid capital. That's rule of thumb, though.
So stay diversified. So many people think in their day trading account, okay, well, I got, you know, 50 grand, so I'm going to put 50 grand in this thing. I never put, even my day trading account, I would say I never get over like 5 or 10% of my working capital into one single trade, because bad things can happen even intraday. So you just need to be very protective of your capital and very cautious that, you know, obviously some of these trades, you know, can move against you very quickly. Turbine's asking, is a nickel really feasible in this market? The type of stocks I trade, yes. So it depends on the types of stocks you trade here too. So, like, I'm often trading General Electric. I'm trading Bank America. I'm trading Johnson & Johnson, Coca-Cola, Procter & Gamble. I trade boring stocks, although I trade Twitter as well. But it is actually, when the momentum starts going your way, a lot of times, you know, if you're not, you know, at day trading, I would say, you know, I rarely am a contrarian in day trading, because once the momentum starts moving in your direction, it can go for a little bit. So if you can catch the turn right when it starts turning, a lot of times you won't take any heat on the trade. So, and that's what I'm looking for. You know, I'm looking for those heatless trades. So I would say, yes, I would say, you know, it depends on the stocks you're trading. If you're trading Palo Alto Networks here at 150 bucks, well, you're going to have to give it more than a nickel, because the thing's trading with a 30, 40 cent spread probably sometimes. So that's why I probably don't like to trade those stocks, just because the spread, you know, is way more than what I want to risk in the first place. So that's why I like trading a few of the more boring stocks. I made my living trading boring. Nick Shaheen will say the same thing. He makes his living trading boring. So, you know, and that's not everybody's style. Some people can really trade, you know, the wild, but I'm just letting you know, so many, there's this belief out there that to be a good day trader, you need to trade the stocks that are moving the most. To make a living in this market, you need to trade the stocks that are moving, you know, that are up 10% or down 15%. I'm going to tell you that is false. You can, you know, there's good traders that trade that stuff and make a living at it. I think it's a lot harder than the stocks that I trade, because I feel like, you know, General Electric, Johnson & Johnson, very correlated with the S&P as well. And I'm using the S&P as an indicator. So you could trade, you know, those stocks there. Palo Alto Networks has almost no correlation with the S&P. I mean, there's going to be a correlation, but not nearly as high as a stock like General Electric. So the S&P is a lot better indicator for a stock like GE than it is a Palo Alto Networks. So that's a consideration, is you can make money trading boring stocks. You can make a living trading boring stocks. So you don't need to always be jumping in and, you know, try and trade for 5 or 10%. But on swing trades, you know, that's, you know, a different story as well. So Ace is saying same thing, 3-to-1 risk reward ratio. I think that's a good one.
Real quick before we get to Tommy, does that same rule apply for options trades as well, Dennis?
Option trades are entirely different. So there's, yeah, but I will say, you know, my options trading, it's more of a swing trading thing. So I'm going to risk more of my option trades.
Gotcha.
For the most part, I usually, you know, if I'm buying options, I rarely buy an option that isn't a lotto. And Nick Shaheen, who's going to be at our workshop in November there in Detroit, is going to talk about those as well. The lotto trades are simply buying calls or puts that are trading for like under a dime. And I'm buying those with the outside chance that, hey, you know, something might happen, an event might happen in a stock, you know, I pick up volatility and, you know, I'm willing to lose the nickel or the dime and take this to zero, or I'm going to sell that option for maybe 50 cents or a buck. those are the lotto options. Those are pretty much the only options, and I'm not a huge options trader, but those are pretty much the only options that I buy. The other thing that I like to do is still sell options too. I used to do a lot of covered call selling on my portfolio. So when I was thinking, you know, a stock is looking, you know, like it's up a little bit too far, but I don't exactly want to sell it. Sometimes, you know, I'll sell a covered call a little bit higher. So if it was to go a little bit higher, I would sell it, and it's a way to bring in some premium, maybe enhance the yield. I like doing it on higher dividend stocks. It's a way to enhance the yield as well. So I will say the only calls I usually buy are lotto calls, and if I'm selling options, I'm usually doing it covered.
And always,
and I'm not a huge option trader.
Obviously,
so that's just my options.
Dennis
strategy.
Can go into detail about this all day. This we got a lot of questions in the chat about this. Dennis, this is one of the things that we'll be going over on the workshop during the workshop.
Yeah, I'll talk about all this stuff. So, and we're gonna have Nick. And Nick's a lot better options trader than I am. Like,
yeah.
I don't even look at options a lot of days. The only times I do jump in options is when I got to feel that, hey, I think the volatility in the stock is about to spike, and a lot of other people maybe haven't priced that in yet. Obviously, on a stock like Twitter, it's already priced in. You're going to pay a huge premium because the thing's in play. But maybe, you know, there's a stock that looks like it's going to go, maybe on a chart from a technical setup, or maybe, you know, there's another stock that, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, this got one acquired, so this one might come into play as well. So, you know, that's when I'm going to go look at options. So for the most part, my day trading is I'm an equities trader. That's
all right.
For the most part.
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to run and grab Tom Ulacki. He's the managing partner and portfolio manager at Relativity Capital Advisors. So we'll be right back.
Whether you're a short-term swing trader or a long-term investor, you need to check out Thinkorswim, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. There's a reason why Thinkorswim has been named the number one trading platform, because it has it all. With Thinkorswim, you can trade stocks, options, futures, Forex, and virtually every other type of order. Get notifications on mobile devices and interact with other traders in chat rooms. You can also use technical indicators and see the latest investing and trading education in Think Money magazine. If you want to keep up with the markets, you need Thinkorswim. To experience everything Thinkorswim has to offer, open a TD Ameritrade account today. Thinkorswim, the online trading platform for traders and investors. TD Ameritrade, member SIPC. All investing involves risks.
Welcome back, traders and investors, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep, brought to you by Thinkorswim from TD Ameritrade. I'm Spencer Israel here with Dennis Dick. We're on the line with Tom Ulacki. He's the managing partner and portfolio manager at Relativity Capital Advisors. Tommy, how are you doing this morning?
Doing great. How about you guys?
We're doing okay. Dennis and I are both having subpar days, I would say. But
I'm sick. He's hungry. It's just one of those days.
It's one of those days.
Tommy
mentioned
wine to me.
That's right. For listeners in the chat, Tommy mentioned he isn't able to get in the chat right now, so I'll be relaying any messages there. But in the meantime, Tommy, why don't you walk us through your nitrous gains today, and what have you got going for us?
Okay. Well, basically what we see on there today is obviously the nicer side is shortened yesterday with the big down move and the meltdown side increased, which often happens. That's nothing all that new. But there are still some looks, I think, that are worth glancing at on both sides. One of the ones that caught my eye on the nitrous was CRK, very small oil and gas name that looks like it wants to come out of a cup and handle pattern. Its volume footprint off the August lows is awesome, and it's also got a 13% short float behind it that could fuel if this thing goes. $150 million company, so you got to be careful. It could be pretty volatile.
You also see GPI. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, GPI was one that caught my eye on here that I thought was interesting as well, that it's an auto dealer. It looks like it's basically trying to come up out of a low base here. That again, it's got to get over that 65 level. But I did make the note here that 68 is actually the kind of the peak highs of this base. But they're more of kind of a spike. That's why I use the 65 level here. But it gets through 65, you can take it and look for how it handles 68 over that. It can run pretty good.
Tommy, also looking here, LUV on your list. You're looking for a gap here. What do you see in LUV, Southwest Air?
Well, Love has got this gap up to 42 right above it, and it tried to go into it and then obviously pulled back a little bit and then surged back up 2 days ago. I think getting back in this kind of second shot into the gap has a better chance of closing it up here. So, again, I would look at the you know, hold over or get over 40 here, I think you could probably ride this up to 42 and see how it handles. Now, again, that's a shorter term trader play. But if you look at there, if it does break that, it's also breaking a weekly trend line, in essence, breaking out of a big weekly triangle that's been going since last summer.
Tommy, just taking you away from the scans for a second, I had a great question this morning just asking me, you know, what I like to risk on different trades. And I basically went through three different setups. I had day trades, swing trades, and long-term investing. I was saying my risk tolerance is very low on day trades. I want to, you know, basically get out as soon as I'm getting on the wrong side of the trade, and the wrong side of the trade is when I start getting red. I was saying for swing trades, I think this is where you fall into a little bit more. I like to do a 3-to-1 risk-reward ratio. How does Tommy Lackey, you know, how do you set up your trades, and well, how much do you risk when you're coming into a trade?
For shorter-term trades like that, I'm in that similar range unless I use options. If I use options, I like to look for a little bit larger risk-reward. But if you're using individual stocks, yeah, I think 3-to-1 is a good range to play. But again, remember that none of my targets are hard sells. As we talked about before, all my targets are just another place to reassess. So the 3-to-1 is when I go in the trade, but when it hits that first target, that doesn't mean I'm ready to sell. That just means I need to reevaluate there. But it's a great exercise to go through to start because it lets you know whether the trade is worth your time or not.
Okay, taking you back over to your nitrous scan here, there's two or three other stocks that are very interesting on this list. Deer is one we talked about yesterday. Had the big bounce up there on an upgrade. It's given it back pretty well. I actually filled the gap yesterday, going all the way back down to 86.57. What are you seeing on Deer?
Well, I think Deer is something you look at. I mean, again, it depends on shorter, longer-term trader, but it tried to make that breakout, and it couldn't do it. But then yesterday we had a really nasty day in the market and it didn't sell off much there either. The volume wasn't very high and all they really did was close that gap. So I would be watching this one both ways, but I think that hold right there, if the markets just don't completely fall out of bed here, I think that could be a nice little sign that this one is not done yet.
You have a regional bank, SunTrust Banks, on your list here, STI. Banks have been very strong. Yesterday was not the case. Banks finally started to roll over a little bit. What do you see in STI?
Well, the rollover, I believe, yesterday had to do with some different put buying and things like that around different financials coming into today's Fed minutes. For some reason, there's a lot of anticipation on the Fed minutes, which I think we kind of got a lot of the message the other week, but hey, that's just me. But in looking at this, I think that this is one that surged up and broke out of a good weekly base, a real long weekly base it's had since the middle of last year. And then now it's just consolidating up here in a flagging pattern. You know, this one, I think someone real tight could trade against a close under 45. But realistically, you probably, if you're looking for higher, you wait for this flag to start to work its way out.
Tom, you're looking at the meltdown scan. You've got a lot of REITs I see, a lot of utilities, and a lot of precious metals. Let's start with where should we start? Let's start with ASA.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty much all that was on that list. It's a long list right now, but it's all the similar names. A lot of retail REITs, which I know you and Joel have been talking about in the past, are on that list right now. But here in ASA, it's a precious metal. This one I thought was interesting because it's definitely breaking down. The volume's been terrible and all that. But another formation you see here, depending on how today acts, is it's also a falling wedge and a pretty nice-looking falling wedge as well. So falling wedges can break out of the lower rail and keep going, which the volume pattern in this one suggests that could be the case. But if we see gold catch a bid any time, I think this one could very likely be closer to those sets of lows. So it's not a trade I'm going to make right here because it's so close to the weekly lower Bollinger Band, but it is really one that someone could look both ways on.
What about going back to your meltdown scanner here? Again, like you said, a long list, mostly just the same categories. Well, let's do SPLS.
I was about to ask about that one. Let's Staples. I mean, we still kind of wonder why that business is still open with Amazon out there, but it obviously is. But, I mean, this one just literally broke its recent lows yesterday on good volume, and the volume the last 4 days has been fairly high. So, you know, this is one I would be looking at from a scenario of continuation down.
What about Starbucks? You say it's that big support from February lows.
Yeah, Starbucks is one that I kind of worry a little bit more about on the both sides type thing. Starbucks is such a big name and all that. You know, if it loses this level, it looks to me like it could just start continuing to roll down. And it really doesn't see, I mean, you have a few different levels, but you really don't see a lot of support here until 45 or below. But on the other end of it, this is a level Starbucks has tested a few times, so we want to make sure it gets a good break here. I think it's one of those areas where with these types of long consolidations, when they break down, you always have to make sure you're keeping a keen eye to see if it's a failed breakdown, because if it is, you want to get out quick, because when they do fail breakdowns like that, they tend to run back to the high points very swiftly.
Relative strength movers here, Tommy, just moving on to your gainers. A couple stocks. You've got First Solar on this list here, FSLR. What are you seeing in First Solar?
You know, I have it on the list, but actually it was kind of the opposite. I told people to be careful.
Okay.
It's one of those to where I am not really comfortable with the way the chart looks and the coming off of it. Yes, if it gets over 40, it can run for a little while. And of the solars, it is your best of the breed. But I think overall that area is pretty shoddy at the moment. So I just said, actually, even though this one was on the list, to be careful with it.
That 40 has just been absolutely enormous for it, and now you're a couple bucks below there. So, I don't know. I look at that, and I think the next leg down, or next leg could be down.
I agree.
Also on your list for relative strength gainers, KSU rail stock here. Big day for it yesterday. Nice bounce up there. Closed at 95.62. What do you see for KSU?
Big day, big volume. It's now cleared all the important moving averages. So, you know, this is one I think I put over the highs, but you could even take it over 96 and then just play it against one of these moving averages. If you're a shorter term player, you play it against a close under the 50 at about 94.91, which is pretty tight. If you're a longer term player, you can play it at a close under 93.50-ish, which is still only a 2.5% stop, which is pretty tight for a longer term trader.
Tommy, coming from her chat, Dr. J wants to know about Caterpillar, C-A-T. Had the Goldman upgrade yesterday. It opened right at the high of the day. This is one of those trades I was talking before. Sometimes stocks open at the highs of the day and you don't take any heat. I just missed it. I wanted to sell this short in the 89s, and I was a little bit in the higher 89s. Didn't quite get there. 90's been like the Rock of Gibraltar. It's been a huge institutional seller up there. That's 100,000 shares that can't get through. Now it's starting to peel off that level. I think the stock is starting to look broken to me. What do you see at Caterpillar?
It's just right at a really important level here at the 89 level. I mean, I won't even say 90. I'll say at the 89 level. It's very important. You were right on that one. As far as the short, it could roll here. An upgrade from Golden, I think, from time to time, has been the kiss of death, people say. Because people always say that
yesterday.
They're selling when they upgrade. But we'll see. You know, I think this one has back to really, for a longer-term player, you got to go back to about 84.50 before you know. You know, that would be your back test of that recent breakdown. But this level it's at right here, yeah, I think short term it could roll down. And again, a lot of this is going to go with overall market at this point.
Tommy,
one more gainer, and then
I was going to get one
more gainer, and then we'll throw it to Spencer for the losers. ALGT, Allegiant Travel. What are you seeing on this?
Yeah, I bought this for a few days and it's been on the RS movers for a bit. And, you know, it's run pretty hard here at this point. I mentioned it 2 or 3 days ago when it broke out, and it's right up against the 200 SMA at 151. So it's one that, you know, you don't jump into this one blindly after a run like this in a tough market, but it is acting very well when the rest of the markets are not. So I think it's something you got to keep your eye on, and if it can get over that 200-day moving average at 151 and hold over it, then this could keep going. It just might take a few days to do that.
Going over to the losers, Tommy, Illumina, ILMN, they were in the headlines yesterday. What do you see out of let me get that ticker right there and think of some ILMN.
Well, there's nothing all that exciting here in this chart other than the fact that that gap down brought it right down to that 125 support level that's been big since 2014. I mean, that's a long time for that support level to have been holding on the weekly. And then there have been three or four times it's been just slammed right down to that level and then held. And I think every one of those times we probably would have said, it's probably going to break, and it didn't. So right here, I think we still have to look at that. The guidance was terrible, so that didn't help. But we did get about 1,600 January 120-160 risk reversals come in yesterday morning, right after the open, saying that, you know, there is definitely some larger money there coming behind this, saying that if nothing else, the bounce is very potential before January.
How rough does
they're willing to own it at 120.
How rough does Tesla look for you?
I don't like Tesla. I think that I love the cars, and I think the concept overall, but right now this chart just looks terrible. It's trying to hold those lows back from early September, but the way it's just bouncing around and back and forth and gapping around, it's just real messy. So it's hard to find a clean spot. But if it loses this 194 area again, then you could certainly be into that 175 and even lower if people don't like the action.
Last of the losers there for you, BioMarine. What do you see out of BMRN?
Yeah, this is an M&A candidate, but it hasn't been holding up here real well. It's one of those, again, to where it's still got some moving average support under it down to 87.50, but the reality is if it loses this 90 area, it's probably going to drop, but I think that's going to be dependent on biotechs in general. It tended to kind of flip back and forth around the biotech runs. It's just this consolidation we've had for the last 3 months it's getting pretty tight, and so under 90 or over 100, and it probably starts getting some legs either direction.
He is Tommy Lackey. He is the managing partner and portfolio manager at Relativity Capital Advisors. He joins us every Wednesday to give us his relative gainers, his losers, and what's on his nitrous scans and meltdowns. Tommy, thank you so much for joining us, and we will have you talk to you again as we do every Wednesday.
Thanks, guys. Y'all have a great week.
All right.
Thanks, Tommy.
8:37 now. Couple minutes till we bring on Tim Seymour. In the meantime, Dennis, a quick and balanced look.
Yeah, let's take a look here. Twitter, 125,000 to buy. Again, we did get some rumors here overnight that CRM is still sniffing around here. It's probably putting a little bit of upward pressure here on Twitter. 125,000 to buy. Bank of America, 217,000 to sell. That's an interesting sell and balance because as of right now, Bank of America is actually trading higher by a couple of cents. So we'll see if that continues to be the case. Just looking here, what's jumping out at me? They're all real small for the most part. I don't really see anything jumping out at me at all. Wells Fargo, 40,000 to buy. ExxonMobil, 28,000 to sell. Abbott Labs, which was crazy yesterday, 22,000 to buy at Abbott Labs. That's about it. They're pretty small. Quiet day.
What I see from Abbott Labs this morning, I had something come across my pro feed.
That was wild off of STJ yesterday, and it opened high, and it was trading the pre-market, and we were challenging it. Like, I was like, why is
right.
Abbott trading flat? Like, it got hit, and then it went all the way back up. It was trading flat on that, STJ news, which wasn't good, and then they hit it hard. So they gave it two chances at Abbott Labs, and obviously on the second chance, it really went down hard, opened up in the 43 handle, and within about 10 minutes was traded down in the 41 handle. So it's a huge move for ABT, which is usually a lower beta stock.
Yeah, that STJ thing from yesterday. Also, Medtronic MDT was trading down as a result of that that story there. We had a headline, pretty good one, pretty good scoop there by the Benzinga News Desk at around 3 o'clock that the Medtronic batteries, which were linked via a Bloomberg report to the same type of batteries that St. Jude's uses, were not the same. Shares for... We pulled MDT real fast on Thinkorswim. Shares. Yeah, it got hit. It bounced back a little bit there. This is a yearly that won't help you. There we go. It got hit. Rebounded, in time for the close, though. 8:39. We're going to take our second and final break of the day and grab Tim Seymour. He's a CNBC correspondent and the founder of Emerging Money. You've probably seen him before on Fast Money. He's on that show pretty much every day. So we'll be right back with Tim.
Whether you're a short-term swing trader or a long-term investor, you need to check out Thinkorswim, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. There's a reason why Thinkorswim has been named the number one trading platform, because it has it all. With Thinkorswim, you can trade stocks, options, futures, forex, and virtually every other type of order. Get notifications on mobile devices and interact with other traders in chat rooms. You can also use technical indicators and see the latest investing and trading education in Think Money magazine. If you want to keep up with the markets, you need Thinkorswim. To experience everything Thinkorswim has to offer, open a TD Ameritrade account today. Thinkorswim, the online trading platform for traders and investors. TD Ameritrade, member SIPC. All investing involves risks.
Welcome back, traders and investors, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep, brought to you by Thinkorswim and TD Ameritrade. I'm Spencer Israel, here with Dennis Dick, and we're on the line with Tim Seymour. He's a CNBC correspondent and the founder of Emerging Money. Tim, how are you doing today?
Hey, Spencer. Hey, Dennis. How are you? Good to be here. Great, you know, a lot going on out there.
So, Tim,
we do have a busy agenda here for today. We're going to get the Fed minutes at 2 o'clock, and everybody is talking interest rates, and are they going higher? Are they not going higher? What's Tim Seymour thinking?
Well, obviously, the market is maybe doing the Fed's work for them, and that's a good and a bad thing for a Fed that wants to normalize. Obviously, you've seen the move in rates, not just on the long end, but, you know, the two-year note is kind of, you know, back to, you know, healthy pre-Brexit levels. We've moved from...
Yeah, the intraday lows in early July on the 10-year 132 up to almost 180. So, but it's not just the U.S. and arguably, you know, I would argue that the move in U.S. rates is also somewhat a function of the BOJ seemingly stepping back and kind of doing an implied tightening at their last meeting, and even the ECB starting to, you know, make a little noise about tapering. So anyway, I mean, bring it back to the Fed though. We know that that was a, you know, as divisive of a meeting as they've had at the last one. We're going to hear what we've already heard. I mean, the thing about Fed minutes is it's a backward-looking set of data or headlines from a backward-looking event. It's you know, I'm not even sure any of that stuff means anything right now. We're not going to learn anything new. But the market's tensions around the Fed. More Fed dissent, more sense of Fed possibly looking to move faster than slower is going to equal more volatility. And you know, we've had a lot of vol this week going into this FOMC. That doesn't help set the stage for, you know, the 2 o'clock announcement.
How much do you think the Fed actually does watch the markets? Because they say they're data dependent here, but it always seems like the markets want to pull back right before maybe we're going to get a big interest rate decision there, and they never do raise rates here. How much do you think they actually do look at the overall markets and look at the overall environment there when they're analyzing it? Do you think they're just looking at the data, or do you think they're actually looking at the markets?
No, I think they unequivocally they do look at markets, and I think, you know, I just think about where we were back in the throes of the crisis, and, you know, effectively the Fed and the Treasury were telling us, you know, that they were targeting wealth effect via the stock market. But if you've been trading markets for a long time, especially S&Ps, you know, there's some times where it's very clear, not only is the Fed looking at the market, but it's pretty clear that there's an influence from the Fed in the market as well. So I think in terms of where we are right now with the Fed's sense of can markets, you know, handle a rate hike, you know, that's not for me to interpret. I will say that I think, you know, we're going to be probably hiking rates again at the end of the year, which isn't the greatest time from a liquidity perspective. And I think the Fed is trying to thread the needle, and it's almost impossible. So, the problem with where we are right now is it's very easy to criticize the Fed. It's very easy to say, you know, how dare the Fed, you know, continue to let, you know, bubbles escalate in asset prices, certainly in real estate. But, you know, the same people want to say the economy is a joke and that it's unsustainable. And that, you know, the other side of the mouth, it's, you know, the Fed would never under any other conditions be hiking in this type of an economic cycle at this place in the economic cycle. So, it's, you know, I think it's the Fed we have, and that's how you are supposed to be trading markets, which is that I think it's going to be impossible for them to be aggressive. I think it's encouraging that rates are higher. We don't want to see rates go significantly higher in a short amount of time, but aren't we happier that the 10-year is at 180 than if the 10-year was at 130 today? I mean, if it was at 130, price would be truth, and people would be telling you this is indicative of you know, an economy that's not only
potentially on the eve of recession, but one that's got a deflationary spiral to it.
What about oil? Yeah, what about oil, Tim? Give us your thoughts on the oil market here.
I think it's again a case where consensus is kind of been all over the map on this, but the reality is that oil prices at $28 were not indicative of where supply and demand forces. We know it's been a supply inspired kind of move lower in oil over the last couple of years, but the assumption was also that there was some read on the global demand environment. OPEC, I think, cut to front and center, does have issues within its ranks with $50 oil. And I think it starts with Saudi Arabia. I think both their fiscal deficit is massive. They are trying to IPO Saudi Aramco. They have, I think, significant social issues at home. They don't expect they're going to get oil at 80. I don't think they're going to try aggressively to push prices there, but I think they want oil above $60. I also think Saudi has less swing production than they have had in the past. And putting a freeze in place at a minimum and a cut ultimately is something that, they have defended market share. They've defended market share certainly in Asia, in China. They've grown it in India. These are priorities of Saudi Arabia. Relations with Iran are always going to be at odds, but it's all, again, a relative basis. I think Saudi and Iran are as cooperative now as they've been in a long, long time, and that's a function of Iran's production being back up to levels that they're not probably going to ever admit they're happy with. But they are well above post-sanction lows, and getting up near 4 million barrels a day, Iran will probably do a deal. Iran's got much greater strength in this process than they've had in a long time. Meanwhile, Putin's comments over the last few days are indicative of Russia, which is now at all-time highs. Pre-Soviet, post-Soviet, we're at 11 point, almost 2 barrels a day, and that for Russia is as good as it gets. There may be some ability for them to put more online through technological advancements, et cetera. But the point is, you've got a lot of players that actually would be comfortable with seeing prices get a little bit higher. I'm of the belief that no matter what, everyone has blinked, and the desire to put the C in cartel again is there with at least enough support. I think oil prices are range bound, but I do think that if you are pulling some small amount of supply out of the market, all you're doing is bringing forward this stabilization process, which either way, I think based upon the cut in U.S. production, we were going to have a stable, we were going to have a balanced supply-demand dynamic in the oil market by the middle of 2017 at the latest. I think it actually brings you even further forward, and ultimately, I think it's destructive for oil. You can see from the futures market and the hedging and the curve that there's been a lot of folks hedging out at $55 oil, and that tells you the limitations of where we're going to go. Oil's not going significantly higher, but the doom and gloom and the destruction that I think was so easy for consensus calls to make 3 months ago, and then OPEC would never get their team in order. I don't agree with that. I actually think that something will happen in November.
Tim, just a couple minutes left with you here. I want to talk earnings, and Alcoa kicked off earnings season yesterday with a flop. We're going to hear from the big banks here, JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, and Citigroup on Friday. How do you feel going into this earnings season?
I think in the absence of the macro factors, I actually feel pretty good about the earnings season when we consider where the bar is, where the comps are. Where the dollar has been year over year, it's been slightly stronger quarter over quarter. But so in terms of what we learned from the banks, for example, so focusing on they who report on Friday, was that loan growth was significantly better than expected, and that these banks were making some money in a very difficult environment. I actually think that
in the third quarter, especially in September, the late part of the third quarter. The banks saw their capital markets business upshift significantly. So I think, you know, from what I've heard from a few folks regarding credit demand recently, you know, whether it's, you know, what J.P. Morgan has said to the market, whether it's what Bank of America said, I think credit demand has softened broadly, but I think loan growth is actually holding up better for some than others. And J.P. Morgan is no question, I think, at the front of the group on that. And I think credit quality is as good as it's been for these guys. So, you know, as we look at earnings season and take the banks in the context of that and think about also other sectors. So, I mean, the banks are still extremely cheap on valuation. Do they have the same earnings potential as they had 5 years ago? Certainly not 10 years ago. But the reality is on core metrics, you would be owning companies that have very strong balance sheets and have made money in a difficult environment. And suddenly, you know, the environment should be better if rates are significantly higher, or at least if the yield curve is steepening. So I kind of like banks into these numbers. I actually think the bar is still pretty low, both not only in terms of the comps, but in terms of expectations. And that's a good thing. I look at a lot of these banks on the charts. And technically, you know, you're retesting kind of high levels you're just off of with the price action the last couple of days. But I think you have technical momentum for a lot of these banks to break out. Bank of America past 1630, for example, to then have some room to run. I think these banks have technically consolidated levels below this and actually look like they can move higher on the charts.
He's Tim Seymour. He is the CNBC correspondent and founder of Emerging Money. He's also a diehard Mets fan, if I remember correctly, Tim. Congratulations on making the playoffs. At least the Mets made the playoffs, unlike the Yankees or Tigers. So you had a better season than either Dennis or I. We'll let you go, though. Hope you have a good rest of your day. And we'll talk to you sometime later in the year.
Look, and it's, guess what? The exciting news is hockey season is right around the corner.
Oh, yeah.
Good luck to the Wings. Going to try to spend, you know, at least a game or two with the Joe if I can this year in the final days. And, yeah, let's all enjoy the winter.
Yeah, let's not get Dennis started talking about hockey. All right, Tim, thanks a lot.
I got the Canadian blood in me there, Tim. I could talk hockey for hours.
You know what? Let's do a special. We'll do a special breakout session on hockey, and we'll try to figure out why there's a business angle to it, and if not, who cares?
Excellent. I like where your head's at, Tim. All right, have a good one.
All right, guys. Bye.
See you, Tim.
All right. Always love having Tim on the show. Great guest. You know, I was going to say let's talk about the financials because we said we would do it in the pre-market show, but we just did with Tim, so we covered, you know, big financials reporting later in the week. There was a couple of stocks that reported earnings that we didn't quite get to, so real quick, Barracuda, ticker CUDA, reported, Q2, this is a non-GAAP EPS, so I'm not thrilled about that, but 21 cents versus 13 cent estimate, revenues of $87.9 billion versus an $85.27 million estimate there for ticker CUDA.
It's a big pop up here, CUDA. I know it's taking out the 26 level. Let's see what it does during the regular session. 26 is big for the stock. Topped up multiple times, 25.77, 25.62. Getting a big lift. It's a type of market, too, where there's nervous Nellies out there. I mean, after yesterday's sell-off, when you get the pops in the stocks, and this is, you know, something to consider as well. When you're trading an individual stock, you've got to consider, obviously, the overall market as well. And when you have a market that's sold off significantly the day before, a lot of times when you see pops on individual stocks, sometimes it can be met with other sellers just because there's people who are looking to book profits and everything just because they're nervous about the overall market. So that's the one thing. Barracuda report looks like a good report, you know, trading up 11% here, but I don't like buying stocks in this market environment that are trading up 12%, so not necessarily shorting it, but let's see how it responds at 26.
LPL Financial had some movement yesterday after the bell on some possible sales talks, so let's pull that
short. Stock is this one? Whoa, he's going off the board here.
LPLA.
This is one that I do not trade here. $32 stock. This is a the big pop there yesterday. Yeah. So it's a big pop. This is one that I don't follow, so I'm going off the board here for me. LPL Financial, only 100 shares to trade here today. It's pulling back a little bit. Obviously, rumors, when rumors start on stocks, anything can happen there. This is a big pop. Nothing materialized here overnight, so it's pulling back a little bit here this morning. Just $32.90 is where the offer is. I don't have much to say here because I don't follow this issue.
All right, and then I did skip over one earnings report. That was Hawk, ticker HAWK, that would be Black Hawk Network Holdings. They reported a Q3 adjusted EPS, 14 cents versus a 10 cent estimate, sales of adjusted operating sales, excuse me, of 169, thereabout million versus 189 million estimates. So they missed the sales by about $21 million.
Nice breakout of the little double top from the last couple of days of 32.45, trading up a buck on light volume here. Last night was trading a little bit more actively in the 33 handle. Upper 33s looks like all kinds of resistance at 34. So I think if you do get up into the upper 33s, I think you'll find resistance. I think you'll find some sellers.
You know what? I meant to ask Tim about Samsung because I saw during his interview, I was just kind of perusing through Twitter, and I saw a tweet from Josh Brown that at one point, I think it was 2014, it said Samsung accounted for 23% of the Japanese economy. I want to make sure I get that right, actually, before I quote anybody. Let's make sure I get that stat right because I thought it was super interesting and didn't get a chance to ask Tim about that. But yeah, Samsung's revenue accounted for 23% of the country's GDP in 2014.
That's crazy if that's true.
That's wild. Yeah, if true. So
I don't know if that sounds like it's impossible to be true, but who knows? You know, there's funny things, but this is not good. I mean, Samsung, you got the phones burning up here, and you know, I saw a video of the one, and it's just smoking and catching fire. Mm-hmm. It's scary. Wait. And who's going to go out and buy those phones right away? Or you know, even if they come back into production, who's going to go? I'm just scared of a Samsung product altogether and stuff because they haven't figured out why. They got to first tell us why this happened, figure it out, and stop it from happening because this is a major issue there, and this is really tarnishing, Samsung's. This is really tarnishing their image.
Did you see?
This is the best news for Apple. That's why Apple's been very strong here last.
I don't remember if it was it was either yesterday or the day before. CNBC at around 4 o'clock, I want to say, or 4:30, or maybe before that, they were they had a segment. They had Samsung's on set. They had big rubber gloves, and the graphics said, "Will this phone blow up?" or something like that. It was like
they're even saying it on. I heard Guy Dami saying on Fast Money that when you're going on a flight here now on the airplanes, they're asking you to turn off your Samsung phone.
Yeah,
I mean the image here is tarnished big time here, and I don't think people are running there when the next phone comes out. People aren't going to be running there to go buy it right away because there's going to be that fear. So, what is Samsung's loss is Apple's gain, and that's why I'm still bullish Apple here. So, not playing it from the Samsung side, playing it from the Apple side.
Hey, from Echograph in the chat, Samsung's revenue was equal to 17% of South Korea's $1.82 billion GDP. So, wow. Little bit of a juggernaut there.
Some big numbers. Quick last look at imbalances, 859. I'll say, they have grown. The ones that I was looking at, Bank of America, 231,000 to sell. Twitter's now 144,000 to buy. The other ones are all pretty small. GE, 41,000 to buy. This is typical. Pfizer, 77,000 to sell. That one kind of stands out. But it's typical on a day that we're flat. So just looking here today, it's a very tough feel. Obviously, Fed minutes. I'm seeing the banks trade a little bit stronger here this morning. We'll have to see what happens after 2 o'clock. What I will say is I feel like the trade is a little bit crowded because banks have been typically stronger over the last few weeks. And the utilities and the defensive stocks have already been annihilated there. So again, this didn't materialize after the jobs report, but I feel like it's a crowded trade to be short the utilities and short the defensive yield plays and long the banks. So that's my concern. If you're entering those trades now, I feel like you're a little late to the party.
I think you'll like our guest tomorrow. We may be only our second guest ever that has their own IMDb page. We have Bill Santiago on the show. He is a comedian / actor / day trader. So he connected with Joel through Twitter, listens to the show apparently. So we're going to talk to Bill about, being a comedian / trader and how those things interlap. Is that even a word? Intersect, overlap. Jesus. I need to take a nap, Dennis. I need some break my fast. I'm dying here. If you missed any part of our show today, you can catch our podcast. We're on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. Just search for Benzinga or Premarket. And please always remember that all the information, material, and content from our show is for informational purposes only and not meant to be investing advice. 9 o'clock now. I am going to go take a nap. Dennis is going to take some decongestion. And then we'll be back with you, with Joel, tomorrow. So in the meantime, have a good rest of your day, and we'll talk to you then.
Whether you're a short-term swing trader or a long-term investor, you need to check out Thinkorswim, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. There's a reason why Thinkorswim has been named the number one trading platform, because it has it all. With Thinkorswim, you can trade stocks, options, futures, Forex, and virtually every other type of order. Get notifications on mobile devices and interact with other traders in chat rooms. You can also use technical indicators and see the latest investing and trading education in Think Money magazine. If you want to keep up with the markets, you need Thinkorswim. To experience everything Thinkorswim has to offer, open a TD Ameritrade account today. Thinkorswim, the online trading platform for traders and investors. TD Ameritrade, member SIPC. All investing involves risks.